Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 5 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host Matt Kupferle, and with our Saturday Night Fab Edition, I'm here with Matthew Davis. Matthew, welcome to opening weekend of Major League Baseball. Pretty fun to have it back.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been basically glued to my recliner over the last 48 hours, and I've just been trying to soak in and absorb everything that's been happening. There's been a lot of news. There's been some role changes that we need to discuss. So it's definitely going to be a filled segment. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. A lot of early victory laps from some folks. A lot of, oh man, everything's gone terrible from some folks. Remember, it's just the first couple of days of baseball. Certainly, we're going to dive into some players. If you remember our format, if you heard last time or if you didn't, we're going to focus on players that are in the NFBC that are owned at 50% or less. We like to use an allocation method just to make sure that it's actionable of how much of your FAB budget you'll be spending. So even if you're not in the NFBC, you'll be able to kind of get your mind wrapped around what that would be. And then as a reminder, FAB runs tomorrow evening for NFBC League. So we really want to get our arms around who these players are. A couple of quick notes, though, before we get started, just a couple of key highlights of different things. Steven Strasburg was scratched today in a start. Looks to be a hand, wrist, forearm nerve issue, but nothing arm-related is what we heard today, which seems, you know, somewhat encouraging. Eric Fetty took his place today in the starting rotation. Hopefully it's short-term in nature, but Matthew, how concerned are you with Steven Strasburg right now?
Well, being that I invested in Steven Strasburg in one of my main events in the second round, I'm going to be concerned regardless, just because you never want to hear one of your pitchers not having feeling in their pitching hand or in their fingers. And being that he was supposed to be the stability or the building block in my rotation, I do have some concerns. It doesn't sound like it is supposed to be too long. The word is right now that it is day-to-day. That's what Martinez mentioned. And so I'm going to try and remain optimistic. He's definitely not a cut for now. I mean, there's nothing, you know, we don't want to freak out to that extent whatsoever. So we need to just wait for the news and try and see what the next step is. I know that they give him an injection earlier today. And so hopefully that helps. And we just have to wait and hope that something good, you know, happens sooner than later and he's able to get on the mound and we don't miss too much Strasburg time.
Exactly. Hopefully, you know, it's maybe a start, maybe two, but he's ready to rock and roll pretty soon. We're also going to talk about some closers in Tampa Bay, in Kansas City, in San Francisco. We're going to highlight those in our FAB section, so that'll be a highlight for sure. Some unique bullpen situations that, you know, maybe as we drafted the last couple days, last couple weeks, we were unsure about, but we'll definitely dive into those. We also had some blown saves from some big-time closers the last couple of nights. Liam Hendricks blew a save for Oakland, even though Matt Olson walked things off with a grand slam. And then Edwin Diaz blew a save today, gave up a home run to Marcelo Zuna. So a couple of those that we want to keep a very close eye on. Matthew, does either of those situations make you more or less worried, Diaz or Hendricks, or are you still kind of in wait-and-see mode on those?
Yeah, there's going to be, you know, some cause for some concern anytime we see somebody blow a save in this boat race. And we saw some issues last year with Edwin Diaz, and it was, you know, nice to see him get the opportunity in back-to-back games. But then, you know, he blew it. And then yesterday when he got the first save, he almost gave up a game-tying home run to Freddie Freeman, albeit a foul ball. But so, that, you know, what if we're talking about two straight games that, you know, Edwin Diaz has blown? And then the concern with Liam Hendricks is the velocity dip. We saw last year the increase in velocity, and now it seems to be down a little bit. Looks like he, you know, obviously he gave up the save. And so, yeah, there's some concerns there. So we do have somebody that we're going to mention a little bit later on that could be a speculation in Oakland. And, yeah, you just have to keep monitoring the closer situations. It is going to be wild. And now that the season's so much shorter, I do tend to, excuse my language, my asshole tends to pucker up a little bit quicker when, you know, somebody blows a save. Like, I have, you know, a couple shares of Hansel Robles, and he was part of that wild late-inning game in Oakland the on opening night, or opening day, I'm sorry. And it wasn't a save situation, but he got himself into some hot water, and then he got tagged with the loss. But it was nice to see that Hansel Robles came in today, and he got the save, and it was a clean save. So, you know, there's going to be ups and downs to all of these closers, and we can't overreact to an extent, but you also can't just sit back and be like, no, it's fine, he's the closer, because your feet can get swept from right under you. So, yep. You just got to keep monitoring the closer market.
Yep, nope, absolutely. This is definitely, you know, as we've talked about in past on past podcasts, you got to be super aggressive in fab bidding. And I think the 60-game sprint is only going to highlight those folks that are really tightened up in their fab bidding are probably going to be, you know, really tough competitors. So a quick note for everybody to remember, and a really good note that Matthew highlights in his article that you can go over to FTN Fantasy and read when that pops up, is the note about the schedule. This is something that we always want to be careful about. I think I've actually joked about this in the past, Matthew. The Cardinals are one of three teams, along with the Rangers and the Rockies, that have only five games next week. Why the hell they only have five games, I don't understand, because then they play, I think, every day but one in the month of August. But sure, why not take 2 days off when you, you know, haven't played baseball for months at a time? Six games for the White Sox, Twins, Astros, Pirates, Brewers, A's, Dodgers, and Giants, and then everybody else, full slate. So we're going to rock and roll, and it's going to be pretty intense next week. Like last week, we're going to start off talking with hitters, then we'll move to pitchers, and we'll just kind of ping back and forth. Obviously, 15-team leagues are a bit shallower, so that's going to, you know, definitely steer us in the direction we need to go. Matthew, you highlighted a bunch of interesting names on minimum bids. A guy like Wilmer Flores that hit a home run today, you know, Jason Kipnis, Albert Pujols, who, you know, a veteran, but still, you know, can get it done. Any of those guys in your 15 team only leagues on the minimum bids that really stick out to you for a low price?
Yeah. So it's with some of these guys like Albert Pujols, the Angels have seven games and, you know, he's hitting in the heart of that lineup. The lineup looks really thin, you know, in Anaheim right now, by the way, without Anthony Rendon. So Albert Pujols essentially jumps up a spot. With Evan Longoria out, Wilmer Flores is hitting third or fourth in that Giants lineup.
Yep.
And, you know, so it's kind of with those two guys, they stand out to me just because we know that they're going to be hitting in the thick part of the lineup. And then guys like Colin Moran, they're, you know, boring, and Josh Reddick, but we pretty much know that they're going to be playing every day. And if you're really scratching for volume or just somebody to get into a lineup, whether it be main event or TGFBI, then some of those guys become viable just simply for a dollar, just to kind of fill that roster spot. And then Alex Dickerson is another one that could be cheap. And that's like the middle of the Giants lineup right there, Wilmer Flores and Alex Dickerson. You know, with all the other options, and now that there's a DH, there's so many different options that you can have at the hitters that are available. So I don't think it's going to cost you much to get Dickerson or Flores. Whereas if they played on a different offense or a different team or different ballpark, they'd cost a little bit more than a dollar. So where they hit in the lineup, and just that they're cheap. So they're good fillers for me.
Yeah, your next grouping is kind of the probably a little bit more than your dollar guys, your 1% to 5%. A couple names that I'm curious to get your opinion on. Austin Barnes, who has now caught for the Dodgers twice, even though Will Smith hit a home run, I think, today in the ninth inning. But Austin Barnes has gotten the start twice behind the plate now. Rowdy Tellez homered today for the Blue Jays. You've got Jay Bruce, who continues to man a premium spot in the Phillies order. Some other guys in maybe some 12-team leagues that I thought were particularly interesting. You know, G-Man Choi, who would obviously move up in a 15-teamer. Shed Long has been pretty interesting. Adam Frazier's betting third for the Pirates. Travis Shaw is betting cleanup for the Blue Jays. Of those names, Matthew, who sticks out the most to you that you know, it's obviously 1% to 5%, so you're not – there's some other guys we really want to talk more about. But who are those guys that has surprised you about their playing time or what they've been able to do with that playing time?
I'm interested in Chad Pinder. He has multi-position eligibility at second base and outfield, and he's kind of hitting somewhere in the middle of the lineup, albeit not, you know, third or fourth, but he's been right there the last two games or the first two games for the A's, and I like their offense. Plus, he brings that multi-position eligibility. We've seen Jose Iglesias now bat third every single day for that Orioles lineup, and albeit that they're Orioles, they do have, Camden Yards is their ballpark, so they have 30 games there, plus a lot of good ballparks in the AL East and some in the NL East. And then, the Iglesias part with him hitting third, I don't mind Austin Hayes and Anthony Santander. Not that they're a part of the 15-team fab, but they're decent young pieces, and I think that they're going to be able to score a little bit more than people think. So I like Jose Iglesias hitting third. And then you mentioned G-Man Choi in that 6 to 9% range. We saw him lead off today, and I like the opportunities that he's going to get. I was projecting him to hit third or fourth in that lineup,
yeah.
And we saw him hitting first. So it was kind of like flip-flop between Choi and Tsutsugo today. But either or, if the Rays are playing a right-handed pitcher, firmly believe that Choi is going to be somewhere in the 1-4 spot in that lineup. Yeah. They like to move pieces around, so we can't tell you exactly how that Rays lineup is going to go, but pretty confident that Choi stays in the top half of that. And then the expensive one would be Kike Hernandez. We've now seen him play every single day for the Dodgers. He's multi-position eligibility himself, just like Chad Pinder. But he's in the Dodgers offense, and he's hitting in a similar spot like Chad Pinder, but it's the Dodgers offense. And he's scolding the ball right now. He's gotten off to a really hot start. And that's kind of been one of the things with Kike, is he always has a good spring training. And then he gets these opportunities early in the season, and then he somehow kind of sizzles off. But he's not doing that this season, and if he keeps going, then
yep.
I'm going to have some more concerns with Gavin Lux, just simply because Kike can move around, and he looks really good right now, and the mustache looks good. So I like Kike Hernandez a lot. So I do expect those bids to be kind of aggressive with him, and I yep. have him projected at the 20 to 25% range.
Sure.
And, and I won't be surprised if he goes for a little bit less. I won't be surprised if he goes for a little bit more, depending on your league. But I could see him, getting – $200 to $250 and maybe even more this week. So, yeah, I love some Kike Hernandez.
Now, Matthew, one name I didn't highlight before we move over to the pitchers that I wanted to ask you about. Jerickson Profar has batted surprisingly cleanup both days for San Diego Padres. It's obviously something, if you get a premium spot like that in that lineup, it's something that we got to keep an eye on. Also interesting to me is, while they've had lefties on the bump against them, Trent Grisham's been batting last. So tell me about, how are you feeling about Profar? Is this for real? Is he really going to be batting cleanup for the Padres? And if so, we got to keep an eye on him, right? How are you feeling about Profar?
Yeah, so his ownership is a bit high, so that's why he's not mentioned in this article. But I do believe that he will hit cleanup, but only against left-handed pitching. And that's all that the Padres have seen thus far in Madison Bumgarner and Robbie Ray. So Trent Grisham is definitely going to be sliding up into the top four part of that lineup. And then once that happens against right-handed pitching, once that happens, we could see Profar go from anywhere from – because now Hosmer's probably going to slide up a spot too – we could see Profar hit ninth. I mean, he could simply just almost switch spots, from fourth to ninth where Trent Grisham is. But I think that Trent Grisham is actually going to end up hitting first or second,
yeah.
In the Padres lineup. So I think once the Padres do see right-handed pitching, you're going to see Grisham get slide all the way up or close to all the way up. And then that's going to push down Profar a little bit. But then I think Hosmer is going to slide past Profar against right-handed pitching as well. So that's at least two spots in the lineup. So I do not see Profar hitting cleanup against right-handed pitching.
Sure.
And I would assume at the earliest part of the lineup, it would be like six hole.
Yeah. Nope. I think that's fair. And, Hosmer, one game, obviously, but a big opening day with six RBIs last night. Unfortunately, didn't make a start today. He was ruled out with a non-COVID illness. But it's going to be interesting just to see how that lineup shapes up. Like you mentioned, two southpaws in a row is a little bit funky, so it'll be interesting to see, where they go from there. But definitely, as you mentioned in your article, at least for a 12-teamer, he's maybe somebody to throw a small bit on. So definitely a good call out by you and something we want to keep our eyes out for. As we move to pitchers, a couple of very interesting
– Hey, real quick.
Oh,
sorry,
Matt.
Yeah, the Padres' offense looking kind of good, huh?
Yeah. Well, the wheels fell off a little bit late with Robbie Ray. He was absolutely dominant in the first three innings. And then Will Myers just tattooed a home run against him. So, no, they definitely looked better. They looked absolutely awful to start. I think Robbie Ray had 6 strikeouts through 3 innings. So, he looked like he was making all those mechanical changes that everybody had been raving about. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, that Padres offense, it's going to be a good one, especially at least at the top half of that lineup. I think, personally, they're going to be better when they can slot Francisco Mejia in, either at the catcher slot or DH, and get his bat into the lineup against righties. So something to watch out for sure.
And Tommy Pham already has 3 stolen bases, dude.
I know. Tommy Pham's
the great.
Insane.
Yeah. Love that. Fan of him.
Okay. Pitchers.
Sorry, man. That was my derail.
No.
I'm just watching the game from here in the corner of my eye, and I was like, hey, there goes Tommy Pham again getting on base.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Minimum bids. You know, we've got some guys, and there's some names that you highlight in your 2 start pitchers, which is a hugely valuable piece of this article. Please do not overlook it. It's the way you differentiate yourself and you win your leagues by keeping your eye on folks like this. Some guys that I want to highlight, though, that you've got on your minimum bids, whether it's a 15 teamer or a 12 teamer, you've got in your 15, you know, obviously a little bit thinner, a guy like Adam Ottavino setting up for the Yankees, which we've heard, I think, that Aroldis Chapman either has come back to the team or is very close to returning to the team. So that'll be interesting with that bullpen. You got a guy like Randy Dobnak that I was really interested to watch his start today against the White Sox. And I actually thought he pitched fairly well for a decent chunk of that start and maybe just ran out a little bit of gas late. You've got Michael King, who came into the game after James Paxton absolutely blew up and did a great job to kind of rescue them out of just a terrible situation. And then in kind of shallower leagues, you may be able to do your minimum bids on guys like Merrill Kelly, who's a 2 starter. You've also got, you know, like the Trevor Richards, Rick Porcello grouping. So, Matthew, in that 12 or 15 team league for minimum bids, who are you taking a close look at and maybe throwing a buck or two at?
I'll stay with the 15 bids for now, but the guy that's standing out to me, just as almost a speculation. So the thing that I like to do, and I try to do each year in the main event, is be a week or two ahead of any certain or uncertain closer situation. And
yeah,
albeit Liam Hendricks is still the closer in Oakland, let's not overreact to that. But we mentioned the velo dip earlier, and last year his success was on that velo increase. So I like Joakim Soria. Another arm in that bullpen is Yusmeiro Petit. Don't feel like he would be the one that gets that closer situation, but he's just a good person to have anyways, just with, you know, his consistency and the ways that the A's are willing to ride him in you know, high leverage situations.
Yep.
I like what Petit brings. And so Soria and Petit, I think if you're able to, you know, get ahead on Soria, put a dollar in this week. And then what happens if Liam Hendricks blows one save next week? Let's just say one, and he saves one, blows one, and he's 1-for-2 now or 1-for-3.
Yep.
People are going to start on Twitter. They're going to start talking about Joakim Soria. It's just inevitable. Once somebody blows multiple saves, people start to pull up roster resource or someone's team depth, and they want to see who the next guy in the wings is. And it's not guaranteed that Joakim Soria is that guy, but if you're able to add him for a dollar and Hendricks does end up blowing a couple saves, how much do you think he's going to cost next week or the week after that? And then what happens if he ends up getting the job? So take, you know, it doesn't hurt. You have churn and burn all year long mantra anyway. So when you have somebody at the bottom, or if it's, you know, a fifth starter and he has a terrible matchup, cut him. Simply just cut him. He's fat. Just trim him off and take a spec on someone like Soria, where you spend a dollar on him and maybe in 2 weeks you have a closer. So he kind of stands out to me.
Okay, Matthew, help us all as we look at these bullpen situations we alluded to earlier. We've got the confusing mess that happened today with the Royals, which I think we were drafting Ian Kennedy early in drafts, and he pitched the 6th inning, which then I think some folks were speculating that Trevor Rosenthal would get the ball in the 9th inning. He threw the 8th, and you got Greg Holland that cleaned up in the 9th. So that's one confusing bullpen situation I want you to touch on. The other I would love to get your opinion on is the Giants. Where do we go with a guy like Trevor Gott? Is he the guy that maintains that position? And you've got another confusing situation in Tampa Bay with Oliver Drake. And you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. The fact that all offseason we were kind of told that Nick Anderson may not be the closer, probably wasn't going to be, and they showed it again today. They brought him in a tough spot, and he got outs. Sort through those pens for me. Who are you spending the most money on, and who are you maybe not so confident in?
So let's start with the Rays and the Giants. They're very similar, but extremely different at the same time. Gabe Kapler is a huge fucking mess, and he's a nightmare mentally, and he wants to desperately do what the Rays are doing. But Gabe Kapler does not have the pieces that the Rays have. So I'm not completely sold that Trevor Gotch is the guy now. I know that people were mentioning Rogers, but we've seen him come in, you know, in open, and we've also seen him, you know, pitch in just the middle innings. So I'm not entirely sold that it is Trevor Gott, but if it is, I mean, you do have to throw some, you know, you have to throw some coin out there, and it's probably going to be more coin than you're wanting to spend on a closer or a reliever alone on the San Francisco Giants. I mean, how many save opportunities are they going to get in total? And then the one with Oliver Drake is, it's the opposite situation with the Giants, where we don't know for certain these managers, they want to get analytical and move these guys around, and, you know, just it's a carousel. But the Rays have Alvarado, Nick Anderson that you mentioned, Diego Castillo. So there are so many viable options in that pen that I just don't simply see the Rays just being like, okay, it's you know, Oliver Drake's job. Yancey Eaton on Twitter, he's a gigantic Rays fan. He even mentioned earlier today, I, for one, am here for my league mates blowing fab on Oliver Drake with the, like, crying, laughing emoji. And I like it, you know, because there are going to be extremely high bids. And I cannot wait to see the range of outcomes in those bids are. But Drake's not going to be the guy. Nick Anderson might not be the guy. Diego Castillo might not be the guy. Jose Alvarado might not be the guy. They all might be the guy. So yep. For that, I'm not going to want to probably get in a pissing contest for what he's going to cost. And then there's just uncertainty in the team context with, you know, Trevor Gott that I mentioned that just kind of have me still scratching my head a little bit. So, and then with the Royals, you mentioned Greg Holland, you mentioned Trevor Rosenthal. It's interesting because Greg Holland and Trevor Rosenthal both have closer experience, and Trevor Rosenthal came into the eighth, Greg Holland came into the ninth. And do you know off the top of your head, Matt, which would be impressive, do you know in the eighth inning who Trevor Rosenthal was facing, if that was like the heart of the Indians lineup, or was it somebody else?
I don't, but I can look it up pretty quickly and
actually
see.
I've got it right here.
Okay,
so Rosenthal did not, well, he faced the top, so he faces 9-1-2.
Yep.
And Rosenthal had Zimmer fly out, Cesar Hernandez struck out, Jose Ramirez struck out. And then in the ninth, Barlow replaced Rosenthal. And then after that, I want to say, was it Holland after that?
Yep.
Yeah, it was Barlow, then Holland. So Rosenthal in the eighth, Barlow in the ninth. So Holland actually pitched the 10th, Matt, not the ninth. It was Barlow that pitched the ninth.
Yeah. You're right.
So it's, you know, it's going to be interesting. But they do both have closer experience. Do you know – so I have in the projected – fab allocations, I have Greg Holland going a little bit underneath Trevor Rosenthal, and that's simply because Trevor Rosenthal is more of a fan in the community. People are more aware and how electric he was, even though Greg Holland was in his prime, but he's older. I just think that Trevor Rosenthal is going to end up getting more, you know, bids placed on him rather than Greg Holland. But you know, maybe you throw a tiny speck on Greg Holland just in case Greg Holland is the guy. But it looks to me that Trevor Rosenthal is going to be that guy.
Yep.
And he certainly could go for just as much as Oliver Drake and Trevor Gott, or maybe even more, because, you know, people like Trevor Rosenthal. So that'll be interesting.
I think the thing to remember with Trevor Rosenthal, given that I got to see him pitch a lot as a Cardinals fan, is that, you know, taking last year aside, where Trevor Rosenthal unfortunately struck out 20% of hitters but walked 30.6% of hitters, which I did not make a mistake when I said that he literally walked almost a third of all batters that he faced last year. It was kind of crazy, but he was coming back from an injury. So, you know, he had Tommy John after he was a Cardinal. He was out of baseball, came back. I get it. I think the thing that we overlook, or at least it always makes me nervous, Matthew, is that Trevor Rosenthal has a career walk rate of 11.4%. When he was a Cardinal, he always got into trouble with working behind hitters and walking hitters. Like you mentioned, his stuff is electric. You know, fastball, you know, damn near 100. The problems that I see for Trevor Rosenthal in being a truly elite closer are that he doesn't throw enough strikes, and he really only has one pitch. He throws a fastball cutter. And so he threw those last year combined, according to Brooks Baseball, 97% of the time he threw a fastball or cutter. He essentially does not have an off-speed offering, curveball, changeup, slider. So he's throwing really the same velocity or close to it almost all the time. Obviously, a cutter breaking or tailing away from a right-handed hitter, his two-seamer going into a right-handed batter. The problem I just have, Matthew, is it's a lack of a repertoire for him, and he doesn't throw enough strikes. So maybe he's going to put it all together. For me personally, saves are something that you're chasing of just you need the save. It's kind of regardless of what else they give you. I just don't see a path to him being a dominant reliever. I don't disagree with what you said in Fab at all. I don't see him being, you know, this top 10 reliever by the end of the year, but maybe I'll be totally off base on that.
Right. And Greg Holland, he actually has a career walk rate of 11.4%. So he's in that same. And if anybody's wondering, the 11% walk rate, that is not good. So if you were curious to know, that isn't something good. And then Holland, he's 50% or 40, you know, high 40% fastball, and then, you know, mid to high 40% slider. And then he likes to mix in a curveball. So I don't know. It's not the best situation. The Royals aren't great anyways. And it's almost like should Trevor Gott, I mean, he's almost similar, right? I mean, we don't really know who is going to be. And the Giants and Royals aren't that good. Whereas Drake is on a good team and people do project or think that the Rays, you know, are going to contend and compete, which they will or should.
Yep.
So I don't know, man. Drake's on the better team, but he's also in a pool filled with other people that are able to get the job done. So each situation is very unique.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, before we wrap up, two start pitchers. There's 35 of them next week. Some are going to be in your piece tomorrow. Guys like Merrill Kelly are under 50% owned. We touched a little bit last week that Michael Wacha, owning the number 4 or 5 spot in the Mets rotation, gets two brutal matchups. Curious to get your thoughts if you've got a dart throw. I think Merrill Kelly's interesting. It's obviously a super small sample size, but that new Rangers Park seems to be playing pretty pitcher friendly so far. Again, maybe it's two games and it's too much to take away from it. You've also got the Reds hurlers, Wade Miley and Tyler Molly, that are could be in for some interesting matchups because they get to go to Detroit next weekend. So that could be an interesting one as well. And then the only other one that catches my eye that I think is under 50% owned still to me is Eliezer Hernandez. He'll get the Orioles and then the Nationals next week. Matthew, any of those that you are thinking about a dart throw for week two that you want to roster, or are you staying away from the majority of these two start guys with what you've already got on your roster?
You mentioned Eliezer Hernandez, and I like him. He gets the Orioles at home in Miami in that nice, spacious ballpark, and then he gets to face the Nationals, albeit in Washington, which plays well for home runs, but the Nationals lineup without Juan Soto, albeit that they put up some runs today, it looks a little thin to me. So I'd be willing to go there. And the other one that I kind of am interested in are both the Rays, actually, or Reds. I'm sorry, not Rays. Wade Miley and Tyler Molly, they get the Cubs at home, which is kind of scary because of the ballpark in Cincinnati. But I'm not sold exactly on the Cubs offense overall this year. And then they both get to travel to Detroit and face the Tigers. So I think that there can be some value there as well. And so those are probably the three that I like the most.
Yep. No, I'm with you there. Yeah, it's just it's going to be hard, I think, as we parse through this to figure out. Two start starters are definitely a premium that we want to keep an eye on. Like you mentioned, if somehow one of these guys has an absolutely dominant two starts, like you mentioned, they're going to be extremely expensive as you go to Fab for week three. So it's keeping a peek out on these guys and maybe even looking ahead to see what's going on. But it's going to be interesting for sure. I like Eliezer Hernandez as well. There's a lot of really tough two starts that I'm probably passing on, no complaints from me from that perspective. So,
hey Matt, there's before we close out here, we didn't touch on Brady Singer, and I kind of wanted to touch base on him real quick.
Yeah.
So, 2015th round prospect, second round drafted by the Royals. He was sitting 94-95 today. He had some good control of the fastball, and his slider was sharp. In five innings, racked up seven strikeouts, three hits, two walks. So his whip ended up at 1.00. And he only gave up two runs his first start. It came on the road, Comerica Park in Cleveland. And the Indians' offense is pretty good. And I know that they were chalky in DFS opening day. So it was nice to see Brady Singer, you know, go toe-to-toe with Mike Clevenger. And that's exactly what happened. Both pitchers gave up two runs. So I'm interested and intrigued by this Brady Singer fella. And that's pretty much it in the 15 teams. And there was one other starting pitcher in the 12 teams, simply because the 15 teams already, for the most part, I believe, already got a hold of Vince Velasquez. But Vince Velasquez is somebody else that I'd kind of want to keep my eye on in 12 teams. He doesn't have a two-start he's not a two-start pitcher this week, but could be interesting to see what he does this week. I know that people are starting to wake up to him again after he's burned all of us for the last couple of years. So we know the pedigree and the electric stuff, and sounds like he's feeling good. So Vince Velasquez would be somebody else to monitor.
Yeah, he looked absolutely electric in his final summer camp start. That'll definitely be one to keep an eye on to see how he goes this week. Like you mentioned, probably owned in 15 teamers, but 12 teams, he could be a little bit interesting. So definitely somebody to keep an eye on for sure. Matthew, anybody else that we didn't touch on or that popped into your mind? Any news, anything else that we want to cover? You mentioned Juan Soto, who got his first official Major League Baseball negative test today, which is great news. Hopefully he'll get a second one and be back on the playing field for the Nationals. Anything else that you want to cover?
No, just want to mention that my week two Fab article will be available at FTN Fantasy, and I'm going to be submitting that to my editor shortly after we get off here. So it might come out tonight or early tomorrow morning, which I prefer early Sunday morning. So when you get up, get your coffee or Bloody Mary going, have your breakfast, or maybe if you go on a morning jog or walk, you're able to listen to the podcast and get home and read the articles. So that's about it for me. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, definitely go check out Matthew's article. It's a very valuable piece. You know, I'm just kind of trying to mine through some box scores and see what's going on. You know, definitely looking forward, Matthew, to seeing your article, taking a look at just everything that's going on. I've got some ideas on what I want to do with Fab, but, you know, there's going to be another a day of games, and I'm going to be probably rushing up like I always am right up until that 9 o'clock central deadline to get things in. So I think that wraps everything else up for us on episode 5. Again, thanks for listening. It's our Saturday night episode of Fab. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spreaker, whatever your venue of choice is. And
we greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, we hope to talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.